sometimes I get, I get nervous. It's my life and my personal struggles and things that I go through. So sometimes it's one of those moments where it can be kind of still emotional and kind of make you want to kind of crawl inside and feel a little nervous about sharing those details. But every time that I do, I feel very, it's almost rewarding to me. And it feels like every time that I sit down, have a conversation about or connect on with someone that has similar issues, I feel like I'm growing more and more as a human and learning more about myself or the things that I've gone through. Because I feel like my whole life is going to be this journey of discovering myself and all the things that maybe I didn't key into in those moments.
Many women will say that their migraine symptoms started or changed at puberty. And that's about the age when our guest today was standing on the podium at her first Olympic Games. She's one of the most accomplished female swimmers in history, a former model, wife, mom, and businesswoman. And she did it all while living with migraine. Amanda Beard won 3 medals in the Atlanta 1996 Olympic Games at the age of just 14. She returned to the Olympics in Sydney, Athens, and Beijing to rack up a total of 7 medals. And what fewer people know is that she battled depression, anxiety, bulimia, and migraine while building a stellar career in and out of the water. And between the Olympics, she gained fame for her modeling career and television appearances. And today, she's enjoying motherhood while inspiring the next generation of swimmers and business leaders. Amanda will share the untold story of her remarkable journey of how she thrived despite her private struggle with migraine and mental health. Amanda Beard, welcome to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you. It's so great to be here.
So you released your very candid biography, In the Water No One Can See You Cry, back in 2012, which chronicled your experience with anxiety and depression and self-image, something that many people, including many women, are struggling with. And I think that it takes an incredible amount of courage to be that transparent about your personal life. And you came out in the New York Times, for goodness sake. So why did you decide at that point that it was time to tell the public what was really going on?
Well, it wasn't really an easy choice, obviously. It took me my whole, career, basically, to come to the point where I felt like I owed it to all the young athletes out there to be very honest with them. I travel the world and the U.S., and I do all these speaking engagements with young athletes. And I'm telling them these stories and of all these amazing things that are happening to me in my life and my accomplishments. And I felt every time that I was doing that, I wasn't being honest and truthful to them. And I felt like I had to let them know what the real world is like and what the things that I've gone through and experienced are like. And I felt like that honesty would really be able to connect me on a much deeper level with all of those young athletes and let them know that they too are not alone in their journeys, and we all experience all these different things in our life, and some very severe and not as severe, but all very important to us. And I wanted them to know that I had a lot of success in my life, but I had a lot of really dark and down moments too, and that is absolutely okay. Doesn't make me weird or odd. I shouldn't be embarrassed or ashamed. I'm very proud of my life and the struggles that I've gone through because it's made me a very strong individual. It pushed me hard to accomplish more in my life, and I wanted them to know and give them that strength as well.
Well, it was an incredible gift because, as we all know, the next generation is dealing with incredible levels of anxiety, right? So for you to be able to share that, I'm sure, was well received and is one reason why you continue to have raving fans to this day. What kind of positive and negative responses did you get at that point in time?
Well, I got some negative responses, but I tried to just ignore all of that as best I can. Actually, when my book did come out, my husband went on all my social media accounts and took them over, so I couldn't look at anything or anything that maybe people were attacking me about or saying to me, because he didn't want me to fixate on the negative. He wanted me to focus on all the positive things that were happening. What I realized is a lot of people around me were experiencing and going through very similar things that I was, and it made me too feel like I wasn't alone in my journey, because when you're going through these bouts of depression or anxiety, you feel like you're the only one experiencing this and nobody else could possibly understand what you're going through or feel the same way. And I had high level coaches come up to me and talk about similar experiences, other athletes, celebrities, parents, I mean, everybody, you know? So I felt like I wasn't an odd duckling, right? I felt like I was just a really normal person going about having life and struggling while doing it.
So do you think celebrities face an additional burden if they choose to disclose chronic health issues?
Well, I think it's one of those things. I don't know if I would call it a burden, to be honest. I mean, it's you talk about it a lot more. So I think you could easily say that it's a burden because you're talking about all these very emotional parts in your life all the time. For me, it felt very healing. I felt like I've come to a point in my life where I'm very content and happy that I'm confident enough to share the experiences that I've gone through. I'm very happy to, although sometimes I get nervous. It's my life and my personal struggles and things that I go through. So sometimes it's one of those moments where it can be kind of still emotional and kind of make you want to kind of crawl inside and feel a little nervous about sharing those details. But every time that I do, I feel very, it's almost rewarding to me. And it feels like every time that I sit down, have a conversation about or connect on with someone that has similar issues, I feel like I'm growing more and more as a human and learning more about myself or the things that I've gone through. Because I feel like my whole life is going to be this journey of discovering myself and all the things that maybe I didn't key into in those moments.
It's part of the human experience.
Right? It's pretty wild.
So you talked about your mood disorders, and many people in our community can relate to that because many deal with anxiety and depression. Was there any reason you didn't talk about migraine at that time?
Well, I think most things that nerves, or not really knowing exactly how to express or put into words what I was experiencing or feeling. Like I said, I'm very private, so things for me to come out and talk about things can be very difficult for me. And when I start to realize and put pieces together and understand what is actually going on with me in my life, it becomes a more of an empowering moment. So I think just not completely understanding all of those things, I just wanted to power through things, right? I'm an athlete, I'm tough, I don't feel weakness. I just wanted to power through and not let myself feel like I had any sort of weakness in my mind. You know, I didn't want my competitors to think or hear anything that was going on with me physically or mentally or any of that kind of stuff. I wanted to just put on this face. I wanted to be able to go onto the pool deck and people think of me as just like this tough athlete that they couldn't take down, and I wanted to keep up that persona. But now that I'm not competing anymore, I don't have to keep that up anymore. And I can just be me, and I can try to understand everything that's been going on as far as all of my symptoms and understand how to kind of constantly create a better life for myself.
I feel the same way. I feel like now that I'm not in corporate America anymore, I don't have to hide the fact that I'm dealing with
it's very... It felt the same, you know, when you talk about things and talk about like anxiety or depression, it's one of those things that you feel like you can't disclose to anybody. But then when you do, you realize how amazing that feels and how people accept you and love you, and you have a really great support system around you. And I think when I started to talk about migraine and suffering with that, I felt and connected with so many people that I didn't connect on that level with my parents and my husband and friends. So just being able to go to those next steps and really understand who I am in my life has been a really, really cool moment. Not that I want to deal with suffering with a migraine, but cool to be able to really share with, you know, sit down and talk to my dad about it. And we don't talk about a lot of feelings like that. So that was pretty fun.
Yeah, when you find it in your family tree. We'll come back to that in a second. So I was really astonished to learn that over half the people with migraine, according to a 1999 study, meet the clinical definition of migraine but don't see a doctor, which is going to be pretty weird to most people in our community because most of them are seeing a doctor. And that 57% are treating with over-the-counter medication as opposed to prescription medication. And that's despite the fact that most of us are still dealing with the reduced productivity and distraction of being in pain. So we always have to remember that this is a spectrum disease, that some people are affected mildly and others, you know, very severely. So all that is said as background. Some people have very good reasons for avoiding treatment. Did you have any particular reason for avoiding treatment yourself?
I don't have a great reason, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I should have, but I should have gotten treatment for a lot of things along the way that I tried to avoid and tried to be stubborn. And it's just my own, I guess, insecurities or you know, the fear of finding out something about yourself, maybe that you want to be in denial of. That can be very, can kind of shake you a little bit and make you, I don't know, I guess don't want to slip back into being kind of depressed or worry a lot. So I'm very stubborn. I don't like going and seeing doctors. I guess I want to just like power through things. My arm could be broken in a spot. I'm good. Just put some dirt on me and I'll keep going and pushing through. So honestly, my husband has been the one that's really kind of pushed me to seek help with everything. And because he sees me struggling with a lot of stuff and he wants me to get better and have a wonderful life that's not with pain or any of that kind of stuff. So having that support system around you sometimes is really necessary for you to actually take a step back and realize that you need to work on yourself and find the answers.
I would agree. The support system helps us to accept the fact that we might have something that we don't want to deal with, that we're not quite ready for yet. And in your situation, you're an Olympic athlete and a model. You know, migraine isn't pretty, and it's also, you know, it feels like it's a weak thing. I'm wondering in your mind how you separate depression and anxiety, which are common comorbidities, and migraine. Why was it comfortable to talk about migraine and why was it comfortable to talk about depression and anxiety but not migraine?
I think for me it was more of a thing of not being able to truly identify what I was going through. I thought it was, I blamed it on other things and circumstantial things in my environment around me and just, oh, I'm just completely stressed out and that's what's, you know, or this is just a moment, it will pass. But it was one of those things, like I tried to make an excuse every single time for it, where then it gets to the point where you can't continue to make excuses. Something is going on that needs to be identified and taken care of, and you need to be able to realize that and take that step towards that healthier journey of your life. You know, I would have those moments where I just visually wouldn't be able to see very well, and I would blame it on, I'm just stressed out, I have a competition coming up and it's just gonna go away and I'll be fine, and you know, I can kind of see this side and that side, so I can still figure out what I'm doing. And I just completely stubborn. I'm a very, very stubborn human.
Stubborn People Anonymous. Are there, what other kinds of symptoms did you experience?
A lot of vision. So it messes with my vision a lot. That was, to be honest, a very, very frustrating thing for me, because I would have a really hard time focusing on the people that would be around me in certain environments. I'd go into a room and my vision would be completely messed up, and I'd be trying to do an interview or a photo shoot or be at a competition. I wouldn't tell anybody, but I would have a hard time focusing on them and concentrating and having conversations, because I was very distracted with what was going on with my eyes. And I always felt like people could tell that maybe there was something wrong with me, and it would make me very embarrassed that, you know, why is she why does she talk like funny? Or, you know, because I had a hard time just having a conversation with someone when I half their face was blurred out, or having a photo shoot, I'd have to go kind of lay down and have a moment to myself. And I felt like sometimes people would be like, we're on very tight schedules, and they don't want to wait for me to go have, you know, 30, 45 minutes to myself. They want it, we're got to get these shots done, you have a competition, you were doing this interview, and we have to move on quickly. So I always felt the pressure to kind of be perform and be present in the moment, even when I felt like I couldn't.
Did you crash? Like, if you kind of powered through a photo shoot or powered through a meet, did you then crash at the end of it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I could always blame it on something else. You know, like a photo shoot, it's exhausting. You're there, you know, 10, 12 hours, you're on your feet, you're constantly doing stuff. So I always just, at the end of the day, it was just, I'm exhausted. You know, at the end of a swim meet, I'm exhausted. So I didn't know how to identify it, that it was maybe other symptoms that I shouldn't have necessarily felt that way at the end of the day. I mean, still physically exhausted, but maybe not the same way, where I didn't want, you know, after a swim meet, everyone wants to go out and celebrate and have fun. And sometimes I couldn't. I just wanted to go to my hotel room and be alone, dark room, just quiet, have the evening to myself to kind of recover from my day.
So take us back to your early swimming days. What were some of the earliest symptoms that you can recall? You talked about the visual disturbances. What other kinds of symptoms did you have at a young age and then later?
Well, besides vision, where that was pretty screwy for me to be able to kind of navigate through, I would get just a pounding a headache, a migraine, to the point where I would be getting very nauseous, not all the time to the point of throwing up, but I remember leading into one big swim meet. I was living in Tucson, Arizona at the time and training there, and I had to wake up extra early because I had to drive out to Phoenix, Arizona for my swim meet. And I woke up and it's almost like I couldn't even walk properly, and I was just having a bad morning, and I was up extra early, so I was just, you know, it was one of those things where I was like, I just didn't get great sleep. I'm up early, so it's throwing me off, but my head was hurting so bad, and to the point where I actually got very, very sick, and I was violently, sorry to be so gross or graphic, but violently ended up throwing up, to the point where I looked at my face after, you know, just kind of trying to clean myself up, and looked at my face, and it looked almost like I had black eyes, and I just felt like my face was very messed up, because it felt like I popped a lot of blood vessels around my eyes, and actually some of my eyes get, I'll pop blood vessels in my eyes, so I'll get like little red dots on my eyes sometimes, and I remember looking at myself thinking, oh my goodness, how am I supposed to go to a swim meet looking like this? Like, I didn't even think about, you know, physically and things like that. This was something that people could see visibly on me, and they would know something was wrong. And I was very much so about hiding everything. So I tried to figure out how to put makeup on my face. I have great waterproof makeup that I know how to use. And I drove to my swim meet, and I felt awful. I had a horrible time driving. I had to drive myself about an hour and a half to the pool, and I showed up, and my coaches definitely noticed something was wrong, but they also know that I don't talk about anything, whether it's I have a cold or anything. It was one of those, I sliced my finger open right before a race, and I was just like, just bandage me up, just, I don't want to talk about it. You know, it's just, they know I'm not going to talk about anything that might distract me from competing that day. But I went to the pool, and I remember jumping in to try to warm up, and it's just loud, and Arizona's very sunny, and the reflection on the water is very distracting. I always wear very dark goggles, even when I'm swimming inside, and people always kind of made fun of me for that, but I always felt like I needed a lot of shade. The lights in natatoriums are extremely bright,
And fluorescent mini pools, which I
they're
hate.
Not very, yeah. They're loud. Swimming pools are extremely loud and very bright, and yes, not a pretty bright. So everyone always wondered how I could see when I was swimming, because I wore very dark goggles all the time, every time that I swam, indoors or outdoors. And I went to this meet, I was warming up, and I just was trying to block everything out, and I had to kind of remove myself from everything for a while and kind of find a corner of the pool deck that wasn't as loud, or I wasn't being approached by very many people, because at swimming pools, a lot of people want to come up and talk, and when I'm in a moment like that, I get very socially anxious, I guess. I want to be away from everybody. So as an athlete, you can kind of blame it on your pre-competition prepping yourself, I guess. You just kind of put your hood on and sunglasses and go sit in the corner, and usually people won't disturb you. But I remember that meet was one of the hardest meets for me to get through. Just, I physically felt destroyed, mentally was having a hard time coping with how I was feeling. I felt very unhappy with myself, my performance that I had at that swim meet. Everything weighs very heavily on me, and I did not swim very well, unfortunately, at that
Shocker.
Swim meet.
Not.
Which then kind of spirals into more, because then I put a lot of pressure on myself. I beat myself up about things. I'm a perfectionist, so when I don't have a successful meet, or I don't perform the way that I feel like I should perform, I really kind of, everything kind of goes inside, and it takes me a while to kind of shake all that off, as far as just overcoming some of the symptoms and the feelings and that I have physically, and then mentally kind of being able to come out on that other side, you know, not always feeling stronger. Now that I look back at it, yes, it did make me stronger. That experience made me stronger. But in the moment, it definitely pushed me down into like a dark little hole for a couple weeks that I had to try to figure out how to bring myself back out of.
Sounds rough. So I heard you talk about light sensitivity and sound sensitivity and nausea. And obviously head pain and the visual aura, but you didn't mention the dreaded swimmer's ponytail, which we talked about earlier.
Yes. Yeah. Well, okay, so swimmers, we don't do our hair very often, and it's jokes, it's a swimmer bun. So we always have wet hair, and you're in the pool 2-3 times a day sometimes, so you're not gonna go and wash your hair and blow dry and flat iron it. So you go home and you put a high bun on your head. And my husband always told me, he's like, you gotta cut your hair. It's just too much weight on you. And so I was like, no. But I would always complain of my head hurting so bad. And I would take my bun out and I would like try to like figure out how to relieve it almost. And I couldn't. It was just, and I just like, you know, it was one of those things. He'd give me kind of like shoulder and neck rubs and stuff. But it was one of those moments. I honestly just thought that I had heavy, wet hair, and that was what was contributing to having kind of that scalp pain and those aches, and come to realize that it's a symptom of migraine.
Allodynia, yeah.
And I had no idea. It's interesting the things that you find out that you kind of just try to make up other excuses for, but when you get a little education, you realize that those things have existed. Basically my whole entire life.
Right. Yeah. It's about connecting the dots. So we talked about the vomiting piece, and some people deal with cyclical vomiting as part of it, abdominal migraine. I'm wondering how your trainers or doctors, did any of them ever suspect migraine or say anything to you about it?
No, it was never anything that was ever brought up to my attention, to be honest. I have felt, personally, I always had a great excuse as to what I was experiencing, and it wasn't always something I never really would have ever have put migraine into the equation.
You know, some people say they try to outwork their issues using something else as a distraction for that true introspection. You've talked about trying to outswim your problems. And did you kind of use swimming as your personal therapy?
100%. Swimming was, it's funny because I always feel swimming put so much pressure and stress on me because I wanted to perform. I had all these expectations for how I was swimming, but it was also the only place where I felt that I could work through my emotions and what I was going through and have a physical outlet for that as well. So, and when you're in the water, it's very quiet, and I really enjoyed that because you just hear the water kind of rushing against your ears, and all the sounds around you become fairly muffled, and you can be alone with your thoughts, while sometimes your thoughts are just about how hungry you are, what are you going to eat when you get out. You also have those moments where you're working through a lot of stuff. You know, I would swim for 5-6 hours a day, so it's almost like I was doing sometimes a couple hours of meditation every single day, where I was just alone with my thoughts, working through things and kind of trying to problem solve my life, I guess, and reflecting on a lot of things. It was definitely a great way for me to navigate through some of my emotional feelings.
Well, that sounds like a healthy process for many of us. You occasionally talk about bombing a race now and then, and the disappointment and guilt that kind of hover afterwards. And many people with migraine feel that way when they bomb an attack. That is, they mismanage an attack and find that they wind up in the emergency room because they didn't medicate early enough, or you know, they expose themselves to too many triggers, and the sort of guilt that comes with that. Do you feel like it's easier for athletes to bounce, and what can we learn from that process of bouncing after a race that can help people with migraine deal with the guilt from attacks?
Well, I think what athletes, what a benefit athletes have is that we have the opportunity to bomb often. So we're always, I mean, every single day, whether it's in a big competition, a little competition, or if it's just at a swim, like a swim practice for myself, you know, I would show up for a practice and I wouldn't have a good practice, and I would get out and I would be upset and disappointed in myself. We have all these moments to really learn how to cope with it, deal with it, and try to move on. And a successful athlete can't dwell on those moments for very long because you have another moment coming up very soon. So you need to learn how to kind of manage and yourself and navigate through those moments. You know, and also we have a really great support system around us. While, you know, not everybody knows exactly what you're going through on the inside, my coaches were always great at kind of helping talk me through stuff, or how to not completely sit there and feel bad for myself, and then to be honest, to see other people bomb too. I mean, to realize, you look at someone and you think, oh gosh, they're so amazing, their life is perfect, nothing's going wrong in their life, and then to be so connected with your teammates and see them go and struggle through those moments as well is almost reassuring that that it's normal, and I'm okay, and it's part of the process, and I'm gonna have these moments where I fall completely flat on my face, and but the way that I pick myself up is what I'm gonna be remembered for, not necessarily how me being flat on my face. So I think for any athletes out there, people do are involved in athletics. You have the opportunity to fall down often, so you have to learn very quickly how to pick yourself back up.
And learn to pick yourself up, back up, have a short-term memory, and have a great coach and some great teammates.
Absolutely.
Who are working through it with you. You shared that you never actually took medication for migraine. Can you tell us why?
Well, I didn't take any sort of medications really for the most part throughout almost my whole entire swimming career. A couple of things here and there, but it was mostly because of drug testing. I was so nervous to be drug tested, and for people that don't understand drug testing, in the athletic world, we get drug tested at all of our major competitions. So say you swim at Olympics, you'll get drug tested after every single race that you swim in. Wow. So within like an 8-day swim meet, you could be drug tested, you know, 8 times in that time frame, which seems wild, but they have to test you all the time. So at meets, I would be drug tested all the time. And then there's random out of competition drug testing where they can literally show up at your door, and they do, at 9 o'clock at night and knock and say, we're drug testing you. So for me, I was always drilled into the notion and the idea, because they would always say, you're responsible for anything that you put into your body, you know, and it can be, and they just, like all the, we had tons of meetings at all these big competitions where they would sit down and talk about doping and drug testing and all this kind of stuff. And they say, well, you know, contamination and factories and all that kind of stuff. And I've heard so many stories of athletes testing positive for things that were in their body, but, you know, saying that they didn't take anything, and then finding out along the road that it was something that was contaminated. And I just stressed and worried about it. I would have a cold. I would take nothing for a cold. I'd have a stomach ache. I'd take nothing for my stomach ache. It would have to be some, get to the point where the doctors were like, this is, you have to take something for it. And then there was a process you'd have to go through with declaring any sort of drugs that you have put into your body and all that. But it was just me being very hypersensitive and aware and not wanting to put anything in my body that might show up on a drug test, even if it was like just a simple over-the-counter medication.
Yeah, that's got to be nerve-wracking. So you're now a mom of 2 young kids, and you have the opportunity to influence countless more through your swim school. What lessons have your health challenges taught you that you'd like to pass on to those kids?
Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, for me as a mom, my kids are very involved in sports, but they're also very young. And so we really focus on the positivity that is involved with sports, how to go about everything. I always joke that people watch sports on TV, you know, for entertainment. So you are literally just an entertainer. So while people get invested and heartbroken when their team doesn't win, they go on with their life, and those athletes dwell on that situation for a very long time. So I talk to like my children and a lot of the kids I work with is you have to be able just to understand that failure is part of the process, and it's a wonderful thing. And I always ask my son, like, when you win, what did you learn when you won? And he was like, I don't know. Like, okay, when you lose, what did you learn when you lost? And he's like, well, and he goes through all these details and talks about all these situations and things. And I'm like, so when you lose, it's just a learning process. All you're doing is learning. When you win, while it's so much fun to win, it's, you're not taking away from that moment nearly as much knowledge as you did from all those moments when you lost. So to be able to just kind of recognize that those moments where you weren't on top of the podium or didn't think that you performed the way that you should have performed, that's because you're going through and you're learning. And the more that you can figure that out and tap into that, the more success and the more of those on top of the podium moments that you're going to have, or you're just going to have the realization that it's fun and it's a process and you're just going to enjoy every moment of it. And every time I work with all the kiddos that I work with, it's like, you cannot be successful in your sport unless you're smiling while you're doing it. If you don't smile, you shouldn't do it. Doesn't mean that it's easy, but you have to enjoy it. You have to have fun with it, or you will not be successful.
So keep it fun.
Exactly.
Keep it fun and learn from failure. And you're also a businesswoman and a professional speaker. What kind of advice can you give to people who are juggling a professional career and a chronic illness?
Oh, wow. To keep on battling. Mm-hmm. I mean, to keep on pushing through and to never give up on yourself, to not allow yourself to be disappointed in who you are or whatever struggles you may be coming up against, to reach out for help that to never be ashamed of that, to allow yourself to show that weakness or what you think is a weakness. Mm-hmm. When you actually look at that, it's really you're being extremely strong when you reach out for help and that support, because it shows that you know that you have a better version of you out there, and you're trying to reach that and obtain that, and you're not going to let the little things around you drag you down. Like, I want to be better. I can be more successful. I can find what's triggering my symptoms, and I can reach out and find the right doctors, the right help, and anything around you, the right friends, the right support group can be very empowering and very important to your life and your health and your happiness in it.
Your team. It all comes back to the team.
Always. Right? Yeah. Always does.
So what else would you like people with migraine and headache disorders to kind of take away from our conversation?
Well, I feel like I don't want anyone to think that they can't be successful while dealing with suffering from a migraine. I want them to know that you can still have everything in the world. You can still be amazing. You can reach whatever level you want to reach in your life. You can still have a wonderful life. But it goes back to making sure that you are taking that time to focus on you and finding out how to make yourself better. But I just don't want anyone to feel like that needs to be what their life is, or that's what defines who they are. And you are so much better than that, but go for it. And it might be a fight, but you are worth the fight.
Awesome, awesome. Well, this has been wonderful. Where can people learn more about you or connect with you?
Well, I have a swim school in Washington. It's called Beard Swim Co. So I post a lot of stuff on social media with that stuff, and on my own personal website and my Beard Swim Co. website. But mostly, if you want some really entertaining photos of me and my family, I would go to all of my social media.
Okay.
Or my husband's, because he's a photographer, so he has much better pictures.
Of you. I'm wonderful. Well, we'll add a couple links to those below your talk so that people can connect with you and keep up with all the things you have going on.
Perfect. Thank
Terrific.
You so much.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Amanda. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
It's been a great time.
Thanks.